Radio broadcast continues. Meanwhile, those of you here in the audience, if you want to applaud, cheer, boo, whatever, go ahead. Just give the candidates an opportunity to have their say. And a reminder, we've asked all the candidates to identify themselves when they speak, so those of you listening on the radio or online can keep track of who's saying what. So it sounds a little strange, but it's easier to keep track of. We have questions from the audience. Karen Louise Booth, Oprah number one.
Hi, Gary. Gary, I'm in the back of the hall here with Bob Coswell from Minneapolis, who has a question for all of the candidates.
I run a program in a Minneapolis drug court called Accept the Challenge, and I would like to ask all the candidates, you know, I'm into community corrections and crime prevention, and I would like to ask them, are you guys, you gentlemen, for crime prevention, community corrections, or are you more inclined to lock a person up and throw away the key?
Bob, this is Mike Freeman talking, and for the last 8 years I've served as Hennepin County Attorney. We have to have a balanced approach. We've sent more felons to jail and prison than any other elected official in the history of the state, but frankly the things I'm proudest about is our work on crime prevention. Drug court is a good step forward. It is not perfect, but for the differences, the people who are addicts, what we need to do is get them into treatment quickly and try to change their lifestyle. For those whose motivation is greed, the drug entrepreneurs, we need also then to move them quickly on to prison. And we need to separate and recognize the difference between them. It's not always clear. We've got work to do, but I'm proud that in Hennepin County and elsewhere in the state, we've been active both in swift prosecution but crime prevention. And that's what I try to continue as governor.
Gary, Ted Mondale here. I think we have to do both, but I think we have to step back and recognize that our whole philosophy of crime and violence has failed. It's not enough to put a couple prosecutors here, a little program there. The fact is, we are now 50th in the nation, 50th in terms of locking up convicted criminals. We have a pro-probation, anti-incarceration philosophy, and it doesn't work. Some of the things that the drug courts are doing for users make sense, but half of the top-level crime convicted, and you convicted them, Mike, half of the top-level drug dealers in 1997 went back out on the streets. So what are we telling our kids? And to change these policies, we not only have to get tough on crime, but we've got to get smart on crime. First of all, we've got to build a metro jail. Space can't be an issue when it comes to sentencing. But secondly, we need to get smart, and we need to focus massive resources when juveniles first get in trouble. What judges and others tell me is we have these kids, and they get in at 9 and 11 and 14 and 15. We need to do the type of thing so we intervene with these children very, very early. Then we need to get the resources that our prosecutors and police need to do our job, both in data and other things that they need. And the other thing also is we need to make massive intervention, I think, in early childhood education and in type of paid-for results like making sure every child reads by the third grade. The link between kids when they leave third grade, which is the time when their reading determines how well they can do math, science, and the other things in school, we can invest dollars and get the results that every child is reading by the end of third grade. And we can make this a much safer place to live. So again, we have to recognize first that the whole philosophy that permeates our criminal justice system is wrong. We need to change it around. We got to get tough, and we need to get smart. And it will take resources. And to do that, we need to cut old programs that don't work and make the investments so we have a safer streets and safer communities.
Bob, this is Skip Humphrey, and I'll tell you. Certainly, for those who are committing crimes, we need swift and certain punishment and real consequences. They need to know that if they do something wrong, they are going to suffer that very direct consequence. And indeed, I've been involved in making sure that those laws are tough like that. But it's not good enough if you start at the state pen. You've got to start at the playpen. Bottom line, that's where it is. That's what we've got to do with Head Start, with early intervention. The RAND Corporation makes it abundantly clear that the best youth prevention program is keeping a kid in school. That's what we have to do. We have to have learn and earn, lead and see, all of the prevention programs. And we need a governor that will work with the legislature to ensure that we not only have a strong consequence, but that we have strong prevention and intervention. That makes a huge difference. It's tax-wise as good also. I mean, if you're intervening and you're trying to, and you stop kids from using drugs and others from using drugs, for every dollar that you put into that effort, you save $15. That's good for taxpayers.
Gary, the problem with just a prevention approach is the reason drugs are being sold is because of money. It's people selling drugs for money. And when Minnesota becomes the best place in the nation to deal drugs, we have a problem that no new programs are going to deal with. And let me say this. You look at some of the things that are happening in Phillips and Minneapolis. You look at some of the things that are happening in Hawthorne or in St. Paul. And I'm a suburban legislator. If that kind of stuff was happening in my suburban district, there would be a riot. And I think we deserve, for the people, any Minnesotans, they deserve to be in a safe place, and the drug dealers on their corner need to be locked up, and we have to change our philosophy to get that done.
Gary. Gary, Doug Johnson, Tower, Minnesota, where we live, it's safe. It's very, very safe. It's very pleasurable to live there. I talked to too many people in the metropolitan area who said it's not as safe as it used to be. And they've been pleading with me as I've been campaigning to try to provide some leadership. The four candidates for Attorney General, the two from the Democratic side, the one major candidate from the Republican side are saying we have to have a new long-range plan for crime prevention in the state. A governor's number one priority should be public safety. And when people are not safe in their homes, when children have to go to school in fear, when senior citizens cannot walk on the sidewalks at night and not have fear, we need a new direction. And Ted, you're right. I think we as a state went too far away from incarceration. And we're 50th in the country in putting people in jail and prison, even though they commit violent acts against people. I think we've gone too far in one direction. I do support, as a teacher, as a former counselor, we need prevention and education. But when people do wrong, they should be punished. When people do right, they should be rewarded. You know, when I'm the governor, if communities come to me and they feel they're unsafe, if drug dealers are running rampant on the streets, because it's, as you know, a huge economic market. And if people are not feeling safe in their homes, in their schools, in their communities, Doug Johnson will bring in the National Guard to bring safety to the communities of this state.
This is Mark Dayton. Before we call out the National Guard, let's go back to your question, Bob, which is, yes, prevention. The saddest sight I've seen in this year and a half has been little second grade students at the end of a school day, 2:33 in the afternoon, clutching the hem of their teacher's skirt because they don't want to leave. They don't have anywhere to go. They're not safe. And 10 years later, they're going to have some place to go, the street, the gangs, and getting in trouble. So your kind of program, getting involved with, as you describe it, getting involved with kids, I believe the schools ought to be open 7 in the morning till 7 in the evening, ideally 11 o'clock at night, 6-7 days and nights a week, so kids have a place to be. And working parents know their kids are safe and productive. And I also agree with what's been said here about our failure to respond to the influx of crime that's permeated this state. And you know Greater Minnesota as well as anyone, but Tower may be safe. Grand Rapids had a gang murder. St. James has had gang-related murders. St. Cloud has out-of-state gangs there. I mean, it's all over this state, and so we've been Minnesota Knights for too long. We finally have an anti-gang strike force 1 year in the making, and it's starting to make a difference. We should have had that 5-10 years ago. It should have been funded 5 times this level a day. It should be working all over the state, be right in the face of every single person who's doing drugs or doing other kinds of serious crime. We have you have to be caught and convicted of 5 car thefts in Minnesota before you do time. I mean, talk about giving a message of, hey, come and take it away from us.
Gary, this is Mike Freeman.
Mark, where were you when we were trying to get the legislature to pass that gang strike task force 4-5 years ago?
Well, I wasn't attorney general, but if I had been, I would have sat there until they did.
Well, we did. We got vetoed. We got vetoed time and time again. And we're going to double it when we get in. When Roger Moe and I, we're going to double that effort. We're going to make sure that gang strike task force is up and running finally, because the legislature finally was able to pass it.
I've read your crime proposal. It's the list of everything you haven't done for the last 10 years.
Oh, my
God. All the people you want to add to the criminal division.
Gary, I'd like to say something. Gary, as Hennepin County Attorney, I've been in the trenches every day in this. And we've made some difference. We put some drug dealers away. We put some gangsters away. We worked very hard to do that. This gang strike force they're talking about, well, I talked to Bob Stripes, the head of our gang unit and the head of the county attorney's office. We've got a total of 5 cases, $7 million in 5 cases. What we need to do is to give prosecutors laws they can work with. 5 years ago, I asked for a 5-year mandatory minimum sentence for felons and possessions of handguns. It took us 5 years to get that through the legislature. That's going to do more to reducing violence in the streets than anything else. Give the cops, give the prosecutors the tools they need, and then legislators, make sure you got prison space so we can put them in. I'm tired of taking good proposals over there saying there's no room in the jails and the prisons, so we can't do that. On the same time, for all of those who think they're easy solutions, like calling out the National Guard, for goodness sakes, we have to do what that gentleman's talking about. Because if we enforce our truancy and curfew laws and keep kids off the streets and in the schools, then they're going to have a chance to succeed. 95% of the kids were truant before they committed their first crime. 75% of the people in prison don't have a high school degree. We have to be real about this. We have to prosecute the bad people and put them away, but we also have to work on crime prevention, and that starts in our schools.
Doug Johnson, Mike, the problem with the law you talked about going to prison for 5 years if you commit a violent crime with a gun is no one goes to prison. It's plea bargained, and it's the same old story. Democrats...
Doug, that's simply not true.
It is true, Mike.
Talk to Tom Foley, your lieutenant governor.
He didn't plea bargain him all the way,
nor do I.
I've
so that's demagoguery to say that, Doug.
And if I could continue. Too often, the victims of crime are forgotten. I had a neighbor that lives 2 houses away from me on the lake in Tower, Minnesota, that was a deputy sheriff. He went to a domestic dispute. He was shot in the head. Thank the God, he wasn't killed. Went to court. The criminal who committed the act was found not guilty by reason of mental illness, went to St. Peter under current state law. If a psychiatrist would find that person sane, that person can go back to Tower, Minnesota. The other example, I had a bill. You talk about Minnesota being 50th in the country in the incarceration rate. We are the only state in the nation that doesn't automatically allow the defense attorney to make the final argument in the court. And when Paul Antonich was killed by 5 young people in the city of Duluth, they brought that anguish and that concern to me. I tried to change the law, could not get it changed. Victims are being denied due process in this state. And again, I don't apologize to say that if the law enforcement officials in this state need help, I've talked already to members of the National Guard, and they are willing to provide for safer streets in this state.
Gary, I think one of the things...
A couple quick comments, and I want to move on to another subject.
This is Skip Humphrey. One thing I want to say, if you want to deal with reducing the kind of violence that is out there, don't let Norm Coleman get elected and allow that concealed weapon law to be changed. That's what you get out of here. How many of you want to have people walking down your streets at the Mall of America or at the State Fair with concealed weapons? That is the way we don't want to go.
Well, Monterey, to put that comment.
Gary, I aggressively went after Norman on that issue very early on. First time I heard him say it, I thought it's the craziest thing I ever heard. And here's a guy that wanted preemption just a few years ago, which would allow St. Paul to have tougher laws. So again, the $1 million in, now you're going to see the new million because he's backing off his positions. I think that what we have to do philosophically, we're at the turn of the century. The economy's changing, our communities are changing. We have to philosophically step back and look at what's working and what isn't. And we in government have to get our incentives right. We have to make sure that we incent people to do the right thing. Early childhood investments, college scholarships, retraining. But then at the same time, we need to make sure that government doesn't incent people to do the wrong thing. And I think it's a time now, as we're going into the 21st century, that we really need to relook at our laws. One of the areas is in guns. The problem in guns is not that honest people are doing the wrong thing or that convicted criminals, you could pass a law and not get it to them. We have a problem now where unconvicted criminals are buying tons of guns and giving them to gangs to use them in their pursuit for dollars to poison our kids. And I think we need some laws like Virginia has. They limit the number of handguns you could buy a month. So maybe you could only buy 40 or 50 handguns a month in Minnesota. That'd be okay, don't you think? And we need to bring, we need, that's in our gun laws, that's where we need to put our emphasis. Making sure that those guns aren't legally moved over to the gangs. I think we need some new laws to be able to do with that. And we certainly don't need the concealed carry law as has been promoted by Norm Coleman.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to a live Minnesota Public Radio broadcast from the Fitzgerald Theater in downtown St. Paul. All five DFL candidates for governor have joined us this evening. Literally just hours now before Tuesday's primary election, they're talking with each other and you about the issues in this year's campaign for governor. One of these men, Doug Johnson, Mike Freeman, Mark Dayton, Ted Mondale, Skip Humphrey, one of them will win Tuesday's DFL primary and move on to the November general election against Republican Norm Coleman, the former party candidate Jesse Ventura, and the minor party candidates as well. We've got a lot of people with questions here in the theater, Fitzgerald Theater, and lots of people have emailed questions in. We're never going to get anywhere close to getting to all of them, but here's one that came in via email. If the federal government doesn't find a place to put the nuclear waste that's generated out at Prairie Island, assuming the federal government can't solve this problem in the near term, is there any scenario under which you would support legislation allowing additional dry cask storage of spent nuclear fuel at Prairie Island's nuclear power plant, at least until the license expires at the plant?
Now, Skip Humphrey, again, let's understand, the issue is not how will you find additional space for this material. We've got an agreement with NSP. There will be 17 of those casks, and that's it. We're not going to allow it to go beyond that. There will not be anything further allowed. We have to keep the pressure on the federal government. But more importantly than just dealing with that very real problem of the waste, we've got to get on in this state with a strategic energy plan. There is no plan that's set forth at this point moving into the 21st century. It's about time we start talking about how we're going to move to sustainable energy sources and how we're going to move on into the future and allow our state to continue to grow, but to grow responsibly as we take care of the environment that we all love and cherish. That's going to be the critical element.
All right, Gary, Gary, Mike Freeman, I was the first, I believe, of the candidates to call that there will be no new nuclear power after the licenses run out in Monticello and Prairie Island in 2011-2014. Furthermore, 17 casts is 17 casts, and that's what they get, and they may have to be shutting down before that. But what I have called for is a comprehensive policy that ensures we have 20% of the energy produced and used in the state by the year 2010 has got to be renewable energy. We've got a lot of wind potential, geothermal, biomass, hydroelectric. We need to move forward as a state aggressively towards alternative energy. We can do that, and we have the time to do that. And by the way, as we stare up in this beautiful theater with lights on that gets a little warm up here, we can do a lot more about conserving energy, and we need to start talking about that. And that's what I want to do as governor.
That, of course, is the beauty of radio. Generally, you don't need these bright lights. Go
ahead. Mark Dayton, I agree, no additional tasks. But I think it's, in a way, indicative of how we blame government for these problems that are creations, where we say, well, it's all the federal government's fault. They can't find some state that's willing to volunteer to be a national sacrifice area and take all of our nuclear waste, when, in fact, people who were committed on preventing nuclear power's proliferation, who were environmental activists and for conservation and alternative energies, were saying 20, 25 years ago this was going to happen, and the industry ran that down everybody's throat, and now they're saying, well, why can't the federal government solve the problem? So I do agree with you, Skip, that we need an energy department. We need one that's run for the interest of the people of Minnesota rather than the utilities. I say the Public Utilities Commission is well named. It is the Public Utilities Commission. We need a people's commission to set energy policy and utility policies that benefits the people of this state rather than the other way around.
Senator Johnson?
Doug Johnson, I think an even bigger issue is deregulation, and I'm really worried about that. I think we should move very slowly on that. I'm afraid that homeowners, small businesses, medium-sized businesses, farmers could get really hurt by deregulation, and we have to be very, very careful as we move ahead. As some who has seen taconite plants close in northeastern Minnesota, I saw thousands of people have to move out of there, move their families out. I'm not going to say that under no circumstances would I not allow some additional storage. I just will not do that. I feel too strongly and compassionately about maybe we can find acceptable ways so those people do not lose their jobs. I've seen my friends lose good paying jobs. It leads to domestic abuse, child abuse. We had terrible, terrible problems in our region when that happened, and I care and feel very strongly for those workers in Red Wing and Monticello. But Doug, I will not tonight say I absolutely will not look at that issue.
Doug, Mark Dayton, I mean, we all care about jobs for everybody in this state and know the importance of them, but this is exactly the situation we should avoid by being proactive, which is that the industry grabs us and divides us from working folks and saying, if you don't agree to our terms that we're dictating to you right now, you're going to lose all these jobs. That's why, again, we need an energy department. We need a governor who's going to set these policies, work with the industry, but say, we're going to do this to serve the people of Minnesota, and we're not going to let you set us up and then ram this down our throat with a saturation bombing ad campaign to work your will. So it's a matter of getting out ahead. We can protect jobs, and we can have strong environmental protection.
And Mark, that's here. This is
Gary, this is Mike,
why
this
we
is
have
Mike
to,
Freeman,
that's
Gary.
To get at it right.
Now. That I'd like to make is, if we move forward, like I've called for nearly a year ago, aggressively, we can do our renewable energy with Minnesota union jobs, with Minnesota companies. That's one of the places we ought to be targeting our resources. We ought to be targeting resources there so we can build the jobs and create more jobs than exist in these plants today. And I think that's a lot better than Norm Coleman wants to spend $100 million moving a software company from one side of the river to the other. Let's target our resources and create new Minnesota jobs.
Let's go up here to the first balcony for a question. John?
Thanks, Gary. I'm here with Ralph Johnson, who is a longtime resident of North Minneapolis. And what's your question?
Do you guys remember the old Minneapolis Lakers? Do you remember the old North Stars? How about are the Twins next? I used to go out to Nicollet Ballpark and watch the Twins. I used to watch them when they went back and forth to Lexington and played that wonderful game that we call baseball. Now, what's going to happen now? I don't want to pay for any of that. I stood on Nicollet Avenue and watched the ball come over at batting practice and hit the cobblestone and hit knocked out President Cafe windows all the time. I stood next to Dave Moore, of former WCCO sportscaster, and had a wonderful time. But sports is a great, but are we going to, you guys going to build a stadium, going to help, or what are you going to do?
Well, Gary, Ted Mondale, I understand your concern, but I think also one of the reasons most people don't trust government anymore is we can't control our spending, and we don't prioritize where our dollars go. And it's not an either or. Government can only spend a dollar once. And I will assure you that if you take the step to say we're going to build all the sports stadiums that all the sports teams want, you can't make the investments in education, you can't make the tax breaks, you can't do the type of things that are going to help people in the future. And I think we have to be clear about what we're for and what we're not and what our priorities and what we aren't. A lot of times we talk about our goals are this, our goals are that, our goals are this. My goal is everybody has a job, they make $1 million a year, and nothing bad happens in the world. And I didn't put that in the book, Mike, in case you were thinking.
I thought I saw that in the foreword.
We need to be realistic with the public. And I've been very clear that as governor, the stadium is a very, very low priority of mine, and the dollars are not going to come on my watch. And people who want a new baseball stadium with any state money or any support should not vote for me, because I'm not going to let it happen.
Well, they shouldn't vote for me. This is Mark Dayton. They shouldn't vote for me either. And you know, I know I'm really getting old when not only can I remember the teams you mentioned, I can remember the ones before them, the old Minneapolis Millers at Nicollet Park and the Millers things, hockey games at the Minneapolis Arena. And I must say, I love hockey, but I don't miss the North Stars because I find youth hockey and high school hockey and the Gopher hockey so much more enjoyable. And I would certainly second what Ted said, absolutely no public dollars for these facilities. I think those public dollars ought to go into building hundreds of ballparks, hundreds of hockey arenas and basketball courts all over the state for the kids of this state. And let's get behind those teams. Those are the teams that deserve our support.
This is Skip Humphrey. Let me just ask a couple questions. How many people here want the Twins to leave? I don't see one. I don't see one hand going up. How many of you want to pay any of your taxes to build a stadium for the Twins? Hardly any. The people have spoken. There are going to be no taxpayer dollars to go to line the pockets of wealthy sports team owners. That's not a priority. It may be a priority for Arne Carlson, never mind the fact that we have a farm crisis. What does he do? He calls on legislators to please come together to build a stadium,
Gary.
And it's maybe a priority for Norm Coleman, but it's not a priority for me. I guarantee you that. We're going to take care of schools first, accessible health care. We're going to make sure that we stop the violence, and we're going to return those tax dollars to people, to working families.
Gary, this is Mike Freeman, and I have been consistently said no public state tax dollars for a stadium, anywhere. Now, Skip, that's kind of intriguing that you're talking, taking a poll today, because your running mate and my good friend Roger Mole, well, you know, he put together the deal that gave Norm Coleman his hockey luxury suites at the cost of $95 million of our taxpayer dollars. And my good friend Roger Mole, and former colleague, and your running mate flew around the state with your pal, Norm Coleman, and Arne Carlson trying to talk about state tax dollars for a Twin Stadium. And Skip, I agree sometimes with Ted, sometimes I do. You know, people got to be straightforward. Skip, you've been both sides of this issue like you've been a bunch of stuff. Skip,
Mike,
there's no credibility
Mike,
there guys, about you on stadium.
Folks, this is not, let me just say,
This is not Prairie Home Companion, and Garrison Keillor is not here, so understand we're in the last 48 hours, and people are making these kinds of attacks.
Gary?
I have not said anything about...
Gary?
I have not said anything about Mike's lieutenant governor or his campaign chair, who made...
They didn't put the deal together.
I guarantee you this, we don't need to demagogue on the basis of individuals. That's not, you know my position, you know where I've been, and you know where I'm going, Mike.
Gary,
go ahead, Doug.
Doug Johnson, I thought it was going to be a filibuster there for a while, but you know, you attorneys should quit fighting amongst yourselves. Get along a little better. You know, I had a call from Eric Eskelov, WCCO Radio, a couple days ago, and he said the Citizens for Baseball endorsed you, Doug Johnson, for governor. I said, what? I mean, I led the opposition in a very vigorous, vocal way on the floor of the Senate against using public tax money for a baseball stadium. I still do. I won't change my position. At the same time, Skip, you're right, the showing of hands... Minnesotans don't want to lose baseball. Most Minnesotans don't want to. There's a lot of people, particularly in the rural parts of the state, senior citizens, that love to hear their baseball on radio. And so I think I know why they endorse me. They recognize Doug Johnson as a problem solver that'll take issues head on and find solutions. You know, most of the state budget problems over the past 20 years, they weren't finally settled in the governor's office or in the majority leader's office or the speaker's office. They were bipartisan solutions put together in Doug Johnson's office. And I think that they recognize, and if you people would be polite, you wouldn't mind, you know, this is a democracy, they would look for someone with some leadership skills, and I would simply say, okay, team owners and downtown Minneapolis business community owners, if you want the team, come to my office, but first you bring your wallet and you bring your checkbook, and how much are you going to put into the deal before they ask the state taxpayers to open their wallet to them? But we'll find a solution.
Let's go up to the third balcony. Melanie?
Gary, we have a couple of education-related questions from up here, and so two questions. The first is from two education experts, two teachers up here, who say that they are not yet decided on who they're going to vote for, and they need some convincing. So they would like to hear you talk specifically about your ideas for improving K-12 education. And the second question comes from Anna Ritchie of Spring Lake Park High School.
Okay, I would like to know, you've talked a lot about returning the taxpayers' money and tax breaks, and I'd like to know how you intend to do that and also correct the problem that my public high school is facing right now, where I'm sitting in a class where people are literally sitting on the floor. And you also talk about how crime prevention begins in the playpen, and I'd like to know how you intend to keep kids off the street and in school when they can't afford to be there.
Yeah, those are really great questions. This is Mike Freeman, and let me just trace it briefly because we've got a lot of questions. More than a year ago, I came out with a comprehensive program on education. All-day kindergarten, because kids want to learn earlier and parents want them to learn earlier. Class size no bigger than 20 K through 3, because the younger people need more time and attention. We came out with early childhood increases, and we, most importantly, we came out with the idea and the concept which every Minnesota high school graduate should have a right to go to a vocational program or a college in this state tuition-free, because young people need additional education for the challenge of new jobs in the future. Now, you asked about taxes. This entire program, we work with the Department of Finance, costs $200 million a year. That's $400 million a biennium. I think that's a great investment, not only in the young people in schools, but it's an investment in the future of all Minnesota. And yet I've called for $400 million of property tax relief each of those 2 years. We all agree there's about $1.2 billion long-term increases. That's where I spent it. Those are the two priorities, education and residential property tax cuts.
This is Ted Mondale. And I think I think what we have to do is philosophically look at our education system, and I think we have some problems with the way we're looking at it. First of all, we keep every year we pass these big bills and we're mandating down process. And every year you talk to teachers and administrators, they're going to say, can you just please tell us what you want us to do? And why is so much of this process you mandate down not related to the progress of the kid? And we're getting into a point now where the bureaucrats at St. Paul are seeming to think that they know better how to teach our kids than do the parents and the teachers and the community. And I think that's wrong, and we need to flip that around. Secondly, and we need to pay for results. I have laid out a number of things where we need to change our philosophy and pay for results rather than put money into just the formula. But there's a number of things that we can do. In my book, I lay out a number of investments in education. It starts with early childhood education. We need to fully fund child care, sliding fee scale. We need to expand out the credits to $45,000 a year. That's 30,000 families you bring in. But then we need an educational piece in our early childhood at our child care centers. And so I would fund bringing a protocol into the child care centers that would bring a developmental piece and an assessment piece so we can get at the special ed kids when they're in first and second grade and move them forward. Secondly, we need to do three major things, I think, in our K-12 education. First, I put a proposal forward where we would pay school districts to make sure that every one of their children are up to reading level by the end of third grade. They can do this. This can happen. We have to have the dollars and let the school district decide what happens. Secondly, we would expand out our tax credits that we have today. I would expand it out so that families can use them to purchase state-of-the-art laptop technology. Because in the future, the difference between have and have-nots on this issue is going to be access to information and technology. And third, I would have a performance fund for school districts that wanted to hit higher standards, that we would give them the dollars they need, be it to class sizes, be it to other things. But I think also we need to make sure that people have the type of opportunity in the future. And my biggest investment, of all the investments I want to make sure that every child who graduates from high school with a B average or above has earned the type of scholarship to a 2 or 4 year scholarship so that every child, no matter who they are or where they're from, knows that they might not start in the same place, but if they can get their B, they're going to have their scholarship proposal and can move forward. I think that's a solid education agenda, and I think if we get it put in place, we're going to move this state forward with the type of opportunity for all of our kids.
This is Skip. First of all, I'm very pleased that we finally got to the first priority of the Humphrey Moe administration, which is education. The best public education system in the world. But I don't think you can start at K through 12. You've got to start the day that child is born. You've got to make sure that there's good parenting skills. You've got to support Head Start. You've got to do all those things that will provide an opportunity for that child to be learning as they come into the kindergarten class. One of the ways that we do that is to provide that permanent income tax credit for learning-based child care. Very important that we allow individuals, we're asking everybody to go to work. They're coming off welfare, they're doing all sorts of other things. We need to make sure that parents have the ability financially to have their children in quality learning-based child care. But we also need to have, in K through 12, first and foremost, accountability. The bottom line here is the student performance going up, and we need to see that those accountability standards are in place with a full participation of teachers and parents in making sure that there is responsiveness there. Secondly, we need to get absolutely to the basics, not just reading, writing, and arithmetic. The 21st century is also going to require that we have the ability to work in groups, strong communication skills, a learning of technology. And then as young people go on to higher education, because we know that more than 70% of all the jobs that are going to be available require post-high school education, I don't want to see that someone is cut off because of some economic barrier. And so what we have proposed is an income tax credit to make absolutely certain that it builds upon the HOPE scholarship of the federal government, so there is no economic barrier to get those additional years that are so necessary. It is critical if we are going to have the workforce of the future that we have these kinds of educational opportunities. Now, the third part of all of this is choice. We shouldn't mandate that every single school district have all-day kindergarten. If that is what that independent school district believes is necessary to achieve those goals, then that should be their choice. Maybe what they need are smaller class sizes. Maybe they need the technology that Ted rightfully talks about. The reality is there are different needs in different areas around our state, and we need to work in partnership with our school districts and our teachers and our parents. We need a parent involvement ability. So all of those kinds of things have to come together, and I'll tell you, under the Humphrey Moe administration, it'll be our first priority.
We don't have a lot of time left, but I want to give everybody a chance to weigh in on this question. So I said we don't have a lot of time left before we get to the closing statements, only about 3-4 minutes. So, but I want to give each of you a chance to say something. Anyway.
This is Mark Dayton. The big lie in Minnesota in the last few years was that we're spending all this additional money on our public schools and it's somehow being misspent. And we need a governor who will, first of all, be honest with the people of the state, and secondly, will stop bashing public school teachers and public schools. And recognize that they have among the hardest jobs in the state. I taught 2 years in a school in the Lower East Side of New York City. First job out of college, I've always said it was the toughest job I ever had. And I've been in over 100 schools in this state around the last 18 months, and the jobs that teachers have in these schools now are tougher than the one I faced in New York City 30 years ago. And those who are going to be critical of that should be there and put in the time and understand how hard it is. State share of funding for public education has gone down. I think Minnesotans would be appalled if they saw you in your class with 30-plus kids, and I've seen that all over the state. So we need to put more real dollars into public education, put our money where our ideals are. We need to lower class size, computers and technology, keep schools open 7 months.
Either one of you gentlemen want to... I'm sorry to cut you off, but we just want to get everybody a quick
30 seconds. For the candidates for governor, I have spent more time in schools than any other. I taught Project Head Start. In fact, had to learn that little song. I'm a little teapot short and stout, and that was kind of appropriate. Taught elementary education with a high school guidance counselor. I know what works with kids and what doesn't work, but I have just a few seconds. The thing we have to link more is parents. When we got parents involved, and then it worked better when there was motivation for those little kids coming to school. As governor, I'm going to work really hard with experts to get families more involved with their child's education.
Anybody want to make an additional comment on education, very briefly?
Ted Mondale, I just think, Skip, you've kind of got the old McDonald had a farm tax policy. It's kind of a tax credit here, credit there, credit everywhere, credit, credit. And I think one of the problems is...
Pretty soon it adds up to $1 billion, folks. Pretty good. Permanent tax cut.
There you go. It adds up to a lot more than $1 billion. And the problem with tax credits is those who are least able to afford it can't afford a tax credit.
Everybody.
If you're a low-income single mother, you don't have a couple thousand dollars sitting around to go buy a laptop computer or to go get the child care you need. And we as Democrats need to make sure that the services are available for people that are there, and I believe that we should put our dollars up front so that the people we want to get off welfare to work, the lower income families, have it there for them and not that they have to wait a year to get the dollars.
That's
back.
Why we do it in our balanced budget.
Out of time.
Exactly what we do. Thank you, sir.
I'm sorry we're out of time. You have one sentence, Mike?
One sentence. Education should be universal. That's why it should be available early childhood, and that's why every Minnesota high school graduate ought to have a chance to go to higher education in the state, and that's part of my platform.
That concludes our discussion this evening. Hope you found it informative. Now, before we wrap up, we have allowed enough time for each of the candidates to make a one-minute closing statement on why you should vote for him rather than the other candidates. So the order was agreed upon in advance. So let's get started here. 1 minute each. Mark Dayton, you go first.
This is Mark Dayton, and I'm proposing a new direction for Minnesota based on two old-fashioned principles. The first is the value of work and the opportunity for every citizen to earn the American dream by working. and by earning fair farm prices in the marketplace. That means good wages, living wages in public contracts, health insurance for every Minnesota employee, pensions, workers' compensation, giving people a chance to earn in the workplace the pride and self-respect that comes with a job, being able to take care of their family, and only having to work one job so they can spend time with their family. And it has the effect of reducing the cost of government by reducing the need for government. The second principle is government of, by, and for the people. Julie Janssen and I want to go to work for you, make state government work better for you, and to make sure you get your money's worth for your tax dollars. Better schools, better highways, better environmental protection, moratorium on feedlots. Put us to work. We'll work for you.
Mike Freeman.
After all the issues to discuss, this governor's race is about leadership. Leadership is about articulating core values and following them. It's about integrity and honesty and clear, straight answers about the future of our state. It will take strong leadership to beat Norm Coleman, and it'll take strong leadership to lead this state into the 21st century. I believe I have that leadership. Leadership is a commitment to our kids, to save schools and smaller class size, and to reducing property taxes. Leadership means including all men and all women in the next administration. Leadership means being part of something bigger than yourself, and that's why I'm honored to have the endorsement of the Minnesota State DFL Party, the Minnesota AFL-CIO, and Paul and Sheila Wellstone. It's being part of something larger than yourself. And so next Tuesday, vote Mike Freeman and Ruth Johnson. Thank you.
Doug Johnson.
Doug Johnson, William Jennings Bryan said many years ago, destroy your cities and they will reappear as if by magic. Destroy your farms and rural areas and grass will grow on every main street in America. You know, there's about 2 million Minnesotans living in the rural parts of Minnesota that probably didn't have an easy ability to get to this theater tonight. I know many of them are out in the audience listening to this program. I have been a voice for rural Minnesota in this race. I'm going to be a good governor for all of Minnesota. But the thing that drives me more than any other thing is the lack of enough good-paying jobs in the rural parts of the state and the fact that so many of the young people have to move to the Twin Cities. That's not good for the Twin Cities. That's not good for rural Minnesota. I want to see a Minnesota that's balanced economically.
Okay.
So that moms and dads and grandmas and grandpas can drive across town
to
see their kids and grandchildren, not across the state.
Time's up. Skip Humphrey.
First and foremost, I want to thank the people of Minnesota for the many, many kind words they have said and the commitments that they have made for our future. You have told me time and time again, folks, how much you believe in this state. You know it's a good state. What you see forward in the future is the opportunity to challenge ourselves to make it even better. I believe I have a clear vision, the experience, and the leadership to take us into that 21st century in a good, positive way. The agenda that Roger Moe and I have set forth is what I've heard from you. First, world-class schools. Secondly, affordable and accessible health care. Third, ridding ourselves of the violence and crime that's in our lives. And fourth, returning to you the resources that give you and the working families of this state the energy in order to go forward through the kind of permanent tax cuts that we're talking about. When we do that, we will move ourselves dramatically forward. I ask for your vote. I'll work hard for you.
Ted Mondo.
My name is Ted Mondo. And I'm running a different kind of campaign focused on restoring people's trust in government and offering a clear alternative to the politics of the past. One of my opponent's message is to believe in Minnesota. And I do believe in Minnesota, but I believe in the Minnesota of the 21st century, where every family will have access to affordable child care, where all children will read by the third grade, where every student can earn scholarships to higher education, and where senior citizens don't have to choose between eating and the prescription drugs that they need. I wrote a book detailing how I will build that future by cutting old programs that don't work anymore and investing in the things that will strengthen families and build communities. If you believe that Minnesota needs a new approach to make government work better for people, that the status quo is not good enough, and you want a governor committed to an aggressive leadership, social justice, and opportunity for every Minnesotan, then vote for me, Ted Mondale, this Tuesday.
Well, there you have it, all five DFL candidates for governor. If you are voting in the DFL primary election on Tuesday, all five of these men will appear on your ballot. The one who gets the most votes goes on to the general election in November. We'd like to thank all of you who tuned or turned out this evening here at the Fitzgerald Theater, and all of those of you who tuned in, listening on the radio or following the program online. Usually at this point in the program, in these kinds of programs, the moderator would urge you to vote on Tuesday. And we certainly encourage you to vote on Tuesday. The polls open at 7 in the morning. They'll stay open until 8 in the evening. But frankly, more than just urging you to vote, we really do want to thank all of you for caring enough to find out about the issues and about where the candidates stand on those issues. It makes a difference. Lots of people were involved in putting this debate together, among them the news director here at Minnesota Public Radio, Bill Buesenberg, producers Melanie Summer and Sarah Meyer, assistant producer Sasha Eslanian, political editor Bob Collins, engineer for our radio broadcast Alan Strickland, the four Oprahs here at the theater, Karen Louise Booth, Mike Mulcahy, John Raby, and Melanie Summer, engineering and stage assistants here at the theater, Brian Sanderson, Thomas Campbell, Andrew Sullivan, Dan Zimmerman, Alan Freckman, publicity Tony Bowl and Nicole Larson, and Will Hadland and Kelly Shasky organized the event. If you missed part of the evening debate and would like to hear it again, we'll be rebroadcasting this program from 11 to 1 tomorrow on our midday program, Second Chance to Hear It. And, of course, we invite you to join us for our special election night coverage. Tuesday night starts at 8 o'clock. We'll have all the election returns. We'll be talking with the candidates. We'll have analysis. And we hope you'll be able to tune in. Special thanks again to all the candidates. Special thanks to all of you. Gary Aitken here. Thanks for joining us.